Picture the radar room at a busy approach control on a spring afternoon, low light. A row of controllers, each one working a sector, each one watching a screen full of little data blocks drifting across glass. Airliners stacked into the arrival, departures climbing out underneath them. Ordinary routine. And then the screens go black. Not one screen, all of them. The targets vanish. The radios go silent. The controllers are talking into microphones that aren't transmitting, staring at displays that aren't painting. And out there in the sky above one of the busiest airports in America, there are airplanes full of people who have no idea that the people responsible for keeping them apart just went blind and deaf at the same time. That happened more than once this past year. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS on Radio Hangar, where we take the headline apart and show you the wiring behind it. Because the headline on this one said, "Flight delays at Newark," and the headline doesn't tell the whole story. Not even close. Here's what you need to know. Before we get into it, today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, the discipline, and the pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. Now let's talk about what actually failed. The airport in the middle of this is Newark Liberty International, out in New Jersey. On your charts and in the news, it's Echo Whiskey Romeo. It sits in some of the most congested airspace on the planet, sharing the New York metropolitan area with Kennedy and LaGuardia. For decades, the approach and departure traffic for all three of those big airports was handled out of one giant facility on Long Island, the New York Terminal Radar Approach Control. Controllers call it N90. N90 has been chronically short of controllers for years, understaffed, overworked, and buried under some of the most demanding traffic in the country. So in the summer of last year, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, made a decision. They picked up the Newark airspace, the specific chunk of sky that feeds arrivals and departures at Newark, and they moved responsibility for it clear across the state line to the Philadelphia Terminal Radar Approach Control. The idea was reasonable on paper. Philadelphia had room. Move the work to where you can staff it. Give the controllers a fresh facility, easier to hire into, easier to live near. But here's the piece that matters. The controllers moved to Philadelphia. The radar did not. The radar antennas that actually see the airplanes around Newark stayed where they were, feeding into the New York system. So the picture those Philadelphia controllers were looking at was not being generated in the room they were sitting in. It was being generated up in the New York area and then piped down to Philadelphia over telecommunications lines. Data lines, the radar target, the altitude, the little tag with the flight number, all of it traveling something like 90 miles down a wire before it ever reached the screen in front of the controller working the airplane. Think about that for a second. The controller separating a heavy jet on final from a regional twin on the departure is looking at a picture that arrives over a long distance connection, and connections fail. On the 28th of April this year, one did, for somewhere between 30 and 90 seconds, depending on the position, the controllers in Philadelphia handling Newark lost the radar feed and lost radio contact with the aircraft. The screens went dark. The frequencies went quiet. And then just as suddenly, it came back. Nobody hit anybody. Let me say that plainly, because this is not a story about a crash. The professionals in that room fell back on exactly what they are trained to fall back on. And the pilots in the air did what pilots are supposed to do. No metal bent, no one was hurt. But do not let the absence of a crash tell you this was a small thing because of what happened next. Several of the controllers who lived through that blackout did what any human being might do after sitting helpless while airliners flew through airspace they could no longer see. They took trauma leave under the rules that cover air traffic controllers. That can be a stretch of weeks off, and that leave landed on a facility that was already short-staffed to begin with. So now you have a control room that was thin on people, and it just got thinner, working an airport that runs at the ragged edge of capacity on a good day. And then it happened again, another outage in early May, and again a few days after that. The failures clustered, the equipment that was supposed to carry that radar picture down to Philadelphia kept hiccuping. And each time it did, controllers were left staring at glass that told them nothing. This affects you if you fly anywhere near a major terminal area, and I'll get to why in a minute. But first, let's talk about what the controllers actually did when the screens went dark, because it's the same toolbox you carry in your own airplane. When a controller loses radar, the airplanes don't disappear from the sky. They disappear from the picture. And the first line of defense is procedural separation. Controllers know where they last saw each airplane. They know its assigned altitude. They know its heading and route. And they can keep airplanes apart the old-fashioned way, by clearance and by geometry, the way it was done before radar existed. It is slower, it is more conservative. You put more space between airplanes because you're flying on your memory of the picture instead of the picture itself. That's a big reason the delays piled up. When you lose the radar, you cannot safely run as many airplanes, so the FAA deliberately turned down the tap. Now, flip it around to the cockpit, because this is the part that's yours. What do you do when you lose the radios? You already know the answer, or you should. You squawk 7600 on the transponder. 7600, that's the code that tells everyone on the ground. This airplane has lost communications, and then you fly the clearance you were given. Or if you are in visual conditions, you stay visual, you keep your eyes outside, and you get yourself down safely. Lost comms is a memory item and a regulation, and it exists precisely for the day the link between you and the ground breaks. The controllers had their version of lost comms procedures. You have yours. And the thing that ties both of them together, the thing that kept this from becoming a tragedy, is redundancy. Layers, when the primary system fails, there is a fallback, and everyone knows the fallback cold. Here's the piece I want you to sit with. Though, the reason those controllers had a fallback at all is that airplanes carry independent means of being seen. Most of the traffic in that airspace was broadcasting its position over Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, ADS-B, the position reporting system nearly all of us now fly with. ADS-B doesn't depend on that long radar cable to New York. The airplane figures out where it is from satellites and shouts it to anyone listening. And a lot of the modern automation can lean on that broadcast when the old radar feed drops. That layered picture, ground radar plus the airplane telling on itself, is part of why the sky stayed safe during those dark seconds. So the technology that a lot of us grumbled about installing, the box that cost us real money to put in the panel a few years back, is quietly part of the safety net that held when the wire failed. Worth remembering the next time you pay an avionics bill. Now, why did the wire fail in the first place? Here's where the headline really opens up. The FAA came out and said what a lot of people inside the system had been saying for years. The backbone carrying this data in a lot of places is old. Some of it is copper. Copper telecommunications lines. The kind of infrastructure that in much of the rest of the world got torn out and replaced with fiber optics a long time ago. When you push a critical life safety radar picture down aging copper across 90 miles, you're trusting a lot of links in a long chain, and any one of them can be the weak one. The Transportation Secretary, Sean Duffy, stood up this past spring and laid out a plan to rebuild the air traffic control system essentially from the ground up. New fiber optic connections to replace the copper, new radios, new radar, new displays to replace equipment that in some facilities is older than the controllers running it. It is a multi-year, multi-billion dollar undertaking, and the Newark blackouts became the poster child for why it can't wait. In the near term, for Newark specifically, the FAA moved fast. They ran new, more reliable fiber connections between the New York area and Philadelphia. They added backup systems so that a single failure wouldn't black out the room. And, importantly, they cut the number of flights allowed in and out of Newark, capping the schedule so the airport was running at a rate the facility could actually handle with the staff and the equipment it had. Fewer flights on paper meant fewer delays in practice and fewer chances for the system to be overwhelmed if something failed again. That's the news. Here's the part the news mostly skipped, and it's the part that's mine to give you. This affects you if you fly into or out of any of the big terminal areas, even occasionally, even in a light single. When the FAA meters a major airport, that metering rolls downhill. You've maybe felt it without knowing what you were feeling. You call for your clearance at some reliever field near a big city, and you get handed an expect departure clearance time, a wheels-up window you have to hit. That's flow control. That's the system, managing a constrained resource. When a facility like the one working Newark is fragile, the flow control gets tighter, the ground stops get longer, and airplanes way down the food chain from the airliners, including yours, sit and wait. Understanding why it's happening won't make the wait shorter, but it'll tell you it's not random, and it'll tell you when to just shut the engine down and go get a coffee, instead of burning fuel in line. This affects you if you've ever gotten complacent about your own lost comms procedures because, come on, when does the radio ever really quit? Well, an entire approach control quit for a minute and a half over one of the busiest airports in the country. Systems fail. The link between you and the ground is not guaranteed. Know your 7600. Know what you'd do right now today if your radios went silent in the clag. If you had to think about it just now, that's your homework. And this affects you, frankly, as a citizen of this system, because the story here is not that controllers are careless or that flying got dangerous, it's the opposite. The story is that a fragile, aging piece of infrastructure failed in the worst possible way, and the human beings and the layered procedures around it absorbed the failure and kept everyone safe. That's not luck. That's design and training and a lot of professionals doing exactly what they were supposed to do on the worst afternoon of their careers. Now, let me flag one thing as my own opinion, and I'll mark it clearly so you know where the reporting ends and Tower starts talking. My read is that the move to Philadelphia was the right instinct handled with the wrong sequence. Chasing the staffing was sound, but splitting the controllers from the radar and trusting that long data link to hold put the whole thing on a single point of failure that nobody should have been comfortable with. That's my opinion, offered as opinion. The rebuild that came out of it, the fiber, the backups, the modernization, that's the system learning the lesson in public. I'd rather it had learned it in a simulator, but this is how it usually goes. We fix the thing after it scares us. If there's one line to carry out of this, it's this. The picture on the controller's screen and the picture on your panel are both just representations of the truth, piped to you over hardware that can fail. The airplane is real, the other airplane is real, the separation is real, the glass is just glass. Never stop being ready for the moment the glass goes dark. The reporting on the Newark outages and the FAA's response comes from the FAA's own statements, the Department of Transportation, and the aviation press, including AviWeb. And I'd point you to their coverage if you want the timeline in detail. You can find more at radiohanger.com. Fly like the wire might break. Because one afternoon this spring, it did, and the only thing between a delay and a disaster was people who were ready. Be one of those people. This has been ATIS. I'm Tower. Keep the picture, but never trust it more than the sky.